better.
I like it.
Well, there are two things to be done. First of all, we put him in the hospital and withdraw all television.
I see.
And then we give him this.
Radio!
It's a scorcher out there. I'm Daniel Keelman.
Quackalacka. I'm Kyle Amon.
And this is episode number 157 of Test Patterns, a podcast with many things going on, with quackalacking going on, and so many other fun things.
Oh, yes.
Kyle, how was your weekend?
Pretty good. Doing a lot of swimming. I realized that I'm starting to get a dad bod, so I've been swimming a little more, either today in the ocean against some crazy currents in Carlsbad, or just in our little pool here in our apartment complex. So that's been fun, just doing laps.
Since my daughter's dad bod is in, Kyle. Why are you not wanting to?
I know. The dad bod is in.
Yeah.
I know. I should just go with it. Just really work on that that beer belly that everyone loves to death.
I'm telling you, it's cover of magazines. It's what's taking the ladies by storm right now. So come on, don't you want to be a model figure?
I do. I want to be on the cover of Us Weekly and People, all those.
I want to see photos of you buying toilet paper and laundry detergent as the stars just like us. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. That's a perfect thing to buy with a dad body. No shirt, just go to Safeway, Vons, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, that's what I've been doing. What about, please, go ahead.
Oh, well, my weekend was just busy. It wasn't nothing too crazy going on. So no, just nice weekend. Saw the family. Just
good.
Kept it simple and yeah, it was good. So we have a little bit of an announcement here at the beginning of the show, and Kyle and I have already discussed this to great length. We've been talking about it for a while, and we want to give our audience, our loyal listeners, a heads up to prepare themselves mentally, physically, and emotionally. That as much as we've had a very fun time doing the show, it is that time. Test Patterns is coming to a close, and it's very weird to be saying that. I'm actually not even kidding. I am a little emotional about it. But
I was thinking about that today. like all the even the stuff that's like bad that we covered. Like it was cool like talking to someone about it, especially you. Like it was just kind of it was just kind of like. I looked forward to it every week.
So, I do too.
I mean, we were talking about like I don't think it's definite. Like, oh, we're never gonna do it. Maybe we'll come back and do like a random episode every once in a while. Like, but doing it weekly is getting a little much.
It's hard because a part of me really loves talking to you as well, Kyle. And watching this stuff and making fun of it and then putting something on and putting a show together. It's certainly. Yeah. A really fun thing to do, and hearing from people I know when they say they enjoyed an episode or they bought something on Amazon, like it gives me incredible pride of thinking just this little thing that we're doing, and it's making somebody happy out there, and that's something. I really am touched by that. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is that I mean, as wonderful as it's been that we've been doing it for 3 years now, 4 years, I've kind of lost track. Like, I mean, 150, so I'm doing the mental math there. I guess it's been like 3.5 because we started in like, you know, March, I think, of 2013. We'll get hard details when it gets closer to our final episode.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's been over 3 years and certainly a really long run and it's been really fun. But the reality of it is that it's just becoming more as much fun as I love talking to you, Kyle. And I look forward to this every week. I really do. It's just becoming a little bit more work than it needs to be for what it is, I enjoy talking to you, but I also feel like it's kind of the format maybe a little bit uninspired, like it's kind of run its course. Like, I don't know. There's something definitely missing about it, and I kind of don't want to force doing it.
I don't want to, I never wanted to get into the situation where we're just doing it because, like, well, I guess we had another week, and then we're kind of forcing. I mean, it is kind of timing, like, summer is very dull, and there's not a lot of things to really talk about. But I think it has, like, I don't want to get to that point where I'm, like, dreading, like, oh, God, I got to figure out, like, something to talk about this week.
I don't think it ever gets to the point where we're dreading it, but it's there have been harder. I feel like, you know, when we started, we had all these things where we're like, oh, we're going to, you know, talk about this show that never got talked about and talk about this game, talk about all these things. And I've gotten a lot of talking out of my system. And as much as I still think there's a form, like there's other podcasts that I've listened to now, and I like the way that they present a lot of this, whether it's like older material or newer material. And I just feel like, you know, as much as our format is perfectly fine, I have felt like, you know, I like the way that these things are doing it better. They have like a theme to it or something like that. I don't know. There's a lot of ideas out there. And I just felt like, you know, now would be a good time to give Test Patterns a rest for a while. Maybe it'll come back in a different format, or maybe we'll do something completely different and call it something else. Like, I honestly don't know, but it's certainly, I think now is a good time to give it a break.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to like close this door, but it doesn't necessarily mean that some other venue will open up, or, you know.
Yeah. Well, and also thing. I mean, like, just I think also the hard part of it is like it's the weekly thing. I mean, I love talking to you, Kyle, but I think, and like, I
read up like the text descriptions, but that's nothing compared to what you do every week. Like, I remember I know you're very quick about it, but like, you know, you got a job, like,
I know.
Sometimes you'll do it like the night before, or you'll stay up late right after we record. Like, man, that's a lot of stuff.
And also, not in my defense, I've gotten really good at editing the show, where it is very, very quick to, like, it doesn't take me that long to put it together. But I have gotten, like, at the beginning when we did this, it took me longer because I didn't know the editing program so much. And I also was being so meticulous, like taking out all these ums and ahs and everything, and now I'm just there it is, like, whatever. Like, and so I feel kind of bad but at the same time, I think we've gotten better at, you know, speaking as well, which is one of the benefits of doing a show. You think about how you present, but that's getting pretty, you know, detailed there. It's just because it's become a lot of work, and I appreciate, and you do work on it too, and it takes time out of you, it takes time out of me, and it takes time preparing all these things that we're going to be, you know, discussing and watching them, reading about them, listening to them. Like, I still want to dive into pop culture and what's going on, but to have to think critically about it is definitely taking, it's also taking a toll, I guess, too. It's just, it's become a lot, and
I won't miss all the terrible stuff for review, but I really miss, like even recently with that China Illinois show. Like, this is like a perfect venue for discovering that kind of stuff, because you kind of, I like it that it's weekly, where you just kind of not force yourself, but like, you're like, we're kind of like scouring like lists of TV shows and albums coming out each week, and, you know, we obviously check out like bands, like, oh, we're gonna check out the latest Modest Mouse album or something that's already on our radar, but there are some weeks where we're like, oh, I don't really know what to cover. And then we find something that's like crazy good, or even something that's like just awful from the past. And it's cool to just have that knowledge in the back of your head.
I agree. Like, it's been really fun to see the things that you've turned me on to. And I know, because we talk all the time, and there are certainly lots of times when you'll say, oh, you should watch this or listen to this. And most of the time I'm like, well, it's going in the queue, and I'll get to it eventually. But with the show, it forces me to watch it or listen to it right away. And that's where it's been kind of useful. And I agree. Like, you've thrown some things in my direction that I never would have gotten into. Like,
so many terrible anthology shows.
Well, there's been the hardest ones are the really like aggressively mediocre shows or albums. Yeah. But the best ones are the thing that I take away from it. Maybe I just really enjoyed the really strange things we discovered, like Whoops or The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer. Like, these odds and ends. Like, where do these come from? Like, those are the ones that I really have. I mean, like, I've enjoyed the good stuff, and I've enjoyed these oddities too that we discovered on the way.
Yeah, we'll have to. I think for the final episode, we'll have to throw in some weird thing, because we have like a small list in our
archive
Word doc. Just as like, these are possible things. Like, we should pick one of those for the final
for
episode.
Future. Yeah. We'll have to talk. I mean, if people have any suggestions, now more than ever, you should write us or tell us. But yeah, we don't really have a plan for the finale yet. We'll figure it out as it gets closer. But it's an end of an era. It has been great fun. I absolutely love doing the show. And Kyle, I'm sure when you signed on for this, we had no idea like what we were getting into. I just kind of was like, hey, we should do this, and it just happened. So,
yeah, I think it was daunting at first. I don't know when we changed to like just three segments.
Yeah.
I think four helped out a lot.
Yeah, I remember four, and I was a little apprehensive, but you were like, no, we, and I'm very grateful we did.
And
that's kind of the evolution of it. It's like, maybe this can change. Maybe it becomes something that's monthly. Maybe that's a little bit more workable. We'll see what happens. I'll definitely I'll see how I feel after we finish it and see where I'm if I'm feeling that gap in my life, if I got to do something with it and have the time to, then we'll address it then. And you also have like tons of things going on in your life too. I mean, like it's just so it's
Exactly. Yeah, I have another kid coming in August, so I think it is a good time. Like I think I had that mixed feeling, like, oh, I'm gonna miss that, but at the same time, we can always come back, and I think it'll be even better because we have this experience under belts, and now we can look at it in a different way.
Exactly. Yeah, and I also would be interested in like getting, you know, if we were gonna come back with something, getting more, if there's a way to get more people, because as much as I love talking to you, you and I are very often an echo chamber for one another, and and not to say that we haven't gotten in our disagreements or we have a different perspective on things, but I think, you know, a little bit more variety, or like I've always loved the guests, the people that we've had that can have the time to be on the show.
I wish we had more of those.
I do too. Yeah, and so I wonder if there's like maybe, you know, something we could arrange where we have that as more of a regular thing. I honestly, we have no clue at the moment, but it's been a fun ride, but we do have to. We'll do a final one soon enough. So end of next month is the tentative date. We will keep you posted as the weeks come up. But in the meantime, you should buy something on Amazon and still support the show, because that's going to last long after Test Patterns is over. So please keep supporting the show even after we're done making new ones. Kyle, before we get started on this week's episode, it is the end of the month. So we're going to dust off the old corner and pull out a comic book. So what do you got for us?
Indeed. So this week I picked... It's just like this compilation, Walt Disney Treasury, Donald Duck Volume 1. And the story and the art are from Don Rosa. He didn't necessarily, you know, of course didn't make up the character Donald Duck, but he's most associated with Uncle Scrooge. The popular stories were Carl Barks, and then in the tradition of that. And basically, this compilation from Disney, published by Boom Studios. They kind of ran alongside with the DuckTales series, the animated series. That I think you've watched that, right? You're a big fan.
Back in the day, I never watched it again recently or anything.
I don't know how much it's how well it's aged. But these comics are really funny. Like, it's definitely for kids, but some of the wordplay. And just kind of clever turns of phrases. Like, sometimes they'll poke fun of, like, Americans and how, like, they expect everyone to act like them and talk like them in other countries. Just, like, things that are obviously kind of, like, I kind of associate with, like, a Pixar movie. Like, a really good Pixar movie. I like the art style. If you've seen any of the DuckTales, like, the movie or the TV series, it's very close to that. And most of the time, it's just, you know, Huey, Louie, and Dewey, and Uncle Scrooge comes in every once in a while. I think the really cool ones are kind of like, it's just a play off of, like, Indiana Jones kind of stuff, where they go, like, globetrotting and try to find some treasure, and they get into hijinks. Mm-hmm. And most people, I think, don't really know about Don Rosa. He's done a lot of stuff, like, mostly Disney cartoons. Won 2 Eisner Awards, and bunch of other awards for comic book writing and art. So I just wanted to highlight that. Walt Disney Treasury, they put out a bunch of stuff, like this is one, the Donald Duck volume, but there's a few of them. And there's like the Uncle Scrooge stuff. And they even go back further with a lot of the old Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse cartoons. So yeah, it's a really cool collection through Boom Studios. They do a lot of, I think they do some Adventure Time comic books now. So along that vein, and it's kind of cool that they're putting out these old classics. So this is the run for this compilation is from 1987 to 1990. So, yeah, really good one. Cool. Maybe check it out. I got it from the library. So a lot of libraries now, they put a lot of compilations like these, and they usually have them in the teen section, or sometimes they even have, like, graphic novel sections dedicated in most libraries now.
I see. Shame. Support your local libraries, everybody.
Exactly. The library podcast continues.
Yeah.
The library corner.
We'll record in a library, and it'll just be very quiet with us reading something.
Yeah, everyone will be just like, shh.
Quiet. Well, very nice. So that is the comics corner for this month, and that is Donald Duck, Volume 1. So, yeah, interesting choice. I never knew about that. All right, let's talk about this week's episode. It's all new test patterns, all new things. First up, we're discussing the return of the season two of the HBO serial drama. Anthology series, whatever. True Detective. It's coming back, second season. After that, we have a new Comedy Central series, Another Period. And lastly, we have the sophomore album from country girl Kacey Musgraves, or their latest one, Pageant Material. Kyle, any other thoughts before we get going here on solving some crimes?
As usual, no. I think I said my piece until we get to these segments.
All right, let's do it then. So, first up, we're going to be discussing the second season of HBO's True Detective.
Just one question. Am I supposed to solve this or not? I need a direction to turn, or I may just start pulling down walls. I am no good on the sidelines.
Tell me, how compromised are you?
I welcome judgment.
HBO's True Detective debuted last year in January, and it reached wide acclaim and became a bit of a runaway hit for the little cable network, and got a lot of acclaim with its first season starring Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey as two detectives, and a story bouncing back and forth between the past and the present, and having all these very philosophical discussions about life and time. And it returns with its second season, much anticipated second season, now in June of the following year. This season stars another high-caliber cast. Most noticeably, we have Colin Farrell as Detective Velcro, and we have Vince Vaughn as a businessman, if you will, Frank Semyon. And we also have Taylor Kitsch as Antigone. Oh, wait, no, that's the girl. Paul Woodrug. And lastly, we have, don't have her name here, Rachel McAdams as Mackenzie, or Antigone Bezeredes. So, and she's a cop also, and so is Paul Woodrow. This season's a little bit different right from the start. It takes place in Southern California in the town of Vinci, or Vinci, I don't know how to pronounce it. And they, it's not quite clear at the beginning how everything is connected, I guess. The first season starts off a little bit more clear, so this one's a bit vague. So I'm going to say minor spoilers for the, I guess, setup for this, because it takes a while to get things going. But I'll just say that, so Vince Vaughn as Frank Semyon is this guy who has all these mob connections, but he's also a business partner, and he is in charge. And the story, again, jumps around in the past and the present, but not in the same way as the first season did, where it was a lot more like these interviews going on. It's more just like, you know, get these flashbacks. So it kind of seems just a little more traditional. And it goes with Frank Semyon is this this guy who is trying to get some business done, but he's in a weird situation because the California city manager, Ben Casper, has gone missing the day before he was supposed to present these plans for a light rail in California. And that is trouble to Frank Semyon that he's missing. But then also there's Colin Farrell's character, Velcoro, is doing a lot of he's a detective, and he's kind of paid off by Semyon because
there's a lot of scenes where he's like doing shakedowns like with a journalist to like release something about the town and all the corruption. I can't remember the exact name for what Vinci is, like a fictionalized version of a California town that recently hit headlines for just being totally corrupt. Like it's just like an industrial Southern California town.
Yeah.
And so it has those like film noir type of characters and moments and how everyone interacts with each other. And so Colin Farrell's basically a bad cop and doing bad things.
we can keep talking about it from there. I mean, so yeah, he's a bad cop, and he's also dealing with this problem because his son is a product of a rape to his ex-wife, and we don't really know who his ex-wife is, and we don't know anything about that or what her status is, but we know that he's definitely not...
As I was watching this, I was like, pretty much all of these characters have really terrible pasts, really bad secrets that you don't quite know about. Yeah. Like they've done bad things, or bad things have happened to them. Right. So they're kind of, it's hard because it's, you don't get that dynamic that you had with Woody Harrelson and McConaughey right away, where they're in the car. You're forced to be like interaction, like they're forced, their characters are forced to interact with each other, and you're forced to see that interaction. Whereas these guys, they don't really meet up until later on. And
yeah,
then,
yeah, until the very end, yeah.
Yeah, or at least the three cop
right,
people.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's that first episode, it's very desperate and very disorganized.
I feel like there's a lot of setup going on, because you also have Rachel McAdams' character. Like, she's dealing with her sister, who is, like, performing in this sex cam thing in this house. And then she goes and visits her dad, and their dad is, like, the leader of this, like, you know, new age hippie cult thing. So there's a lot of setup going on here, and you don't really know how it's connected yet. I'm sure it's all going to come together in some way. And then, and then you have Paul Woodrow, Taylor Kitsch character, who's this motorcycle cop who's dealing with his own insecurities, if you will. And he is, but he's also trying to be a good cop. So I don't know how he's going to incorporate into things. I mean, he's the one who discovers, well, he makes a discovery at the end. Anyway,
right.
I mean, I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah. I was torn because I love, you know, they have a different director. They got, what, Justin Lin, who did the Fast and Furious movies.
Right.
But it still has that, like, real dark tone. Like, I loved all the, like, they do it a little bit too much in the first episode, but I still like just the general look where they're, like, showing, like, in between, like, when they jump between characters, they show, like, all the snaking highways all meeting together, very LA scenery, like going by with all the industrial scenery and just terrible LA iconography, but it really sells that picture. And even like some of the smaller scenes, like when Colin Farrell is talking with Vince Vaughn's character in that kind of smoky bar / concert venue, and there's that country artist that I guess is going to play a bunch of her songs are in this season. I like that scene as well. It's just, I think what hurt was kind of like the way it was all plotted out, and there were a few like lines that were like very film noir lines where it's just like hard-nosed, but the way it came out, it just felt weird. Like, it's nothing that somebody would actually say. But I like the hook at the end with like the murder. It's always like the murder in both season one and two, like they're always very weird. There's not quite an occult angle with this one. There's no like weird things hanging off the trees or, you know.
Right.
But
yeah,
this one might turn out to be something similar, but
it might be. I mean, this one seems like more like some kind of serial killer thing where he's trying to make some message or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's more straight ahead, like the light rail. There's obviously businessmen. They're trying to make money off of it. And
yeah.
Yeah, shady town.
I definitely like it. I think that
it's a different beast.
And I like the direction they're going with this season. I think, because nobody really wants them to capture or copy themselves from before, because you're not going to be able to capture the chemistry and the dialogue that McConaughey and Harrelson had. And so these characters are a lot more dark. Those are dark characters too. But these characters, you're right. They all have really bad pasts. And it's not as maybe charming as that first season was, even though it was really bleak too. But, you know, there's still a lot of time to see. I'm interested in where things are going to go. I mean, Nick Pizzolatto, he wrote all the episodes again. So it'll be interesting to see how it all comes together. And I like that he's taking a different direction with it. It's very, very scattered. I mean, with the four different stories and not knowing what was coming together, you certainly had, and it's very, it's not bombastic. This show's very, very quiet. It's like a samurai film more than a Western, I would say, where there's just a lot
There's not a lot of bold scenes. Like, they kind of lead up to it. Like, the first season led up to, like, the bigger moments with, you know, gun shootouts or chase scenes. This as well, there's, like, smaller moments. I wrote down a note where basically the Rachel McAdams character is with another cop, and it's a car situation where, you know, in the first season you got a lot of talking in the car, and in this, like, she immediately shuts down the conversation and then goes to the next character, and I just thought that was like a funny thing. It felt like with this first season or this first episode of season two that it seems like they're kind of addressing some of the major concerns people have with the first season, which I didn't really care as much about, that there were not as many strong female characters. Like, you know, they had Martin's wife.
Right. Yeah, that was
Maggie Hart.
Yeah, I remember.
But with this, I do like Rachel McAdams with, you know, her family history. She's very strong cop, like, take charge, even with both in her personal relationships, but also on the job. So I think that'll be a good thing overall, having her in the mix. And
right.
I like Colin Farrell's character so far. I think he's underrated. I think a lot of these people are kind of like they've chosen a lot of poor things in the past, especially Taylor Kitsch. But I think they can shine, possibly.
Possibly. I mean, I think that Colin Farrell does do a really good job here. He does a loser and schlubby and washed up really, really well. And you... Part of you really feels for him, then part of you is just like, he's a bad person. And I mean, but he's had a lot of bad things happen too, so you're sympathetic to a degree, but you're also, he's certainly does a lot of violent things in this first episode. And the way that those scenes go down are really, really well done. Like when he goes to that one person's house and sorry, I have to be like vague on for not giving away too much, but
that
scene is just, there's so much tension there, and the way that it explodes is very unexpected, but it's jarring.
Yeah. I think that it's not quite as pronounced as the first season with the light, dark characters, because they're all very dark, but I think Taylor Kitsch, this character, and Rachel McAdams, they're a little more on the lighter side, where it's Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn, like, they're the more darker characters.
It's also nice to see Vince Vaughn not really doing Vince Vaughn. He's very low-key.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Does, like, he has, you know, he's just doing business. He's very smart, but he's more just kind of moving things around. He's very quiet, and he gets things done, and I like seeing
him can tell that he's more of a... Like, I've been watching the Wire, and he's more like those career criminals than the people that are out on the street. Like, and he's trying to make it, like, right slowly with this high-speed rail situation, but it's probably going to unravel, and he'll have to go back into doing what he used to do best. So we'll see. I think so far I don't like it as much as first season, but it's also the first episode.
Yeah.
But it still has all those hooks that I enjoyed about... season one. The basic structure.
Yeah, I think anybody that likes season one, there's certainly plenty to find here that you'll dig in right away. And I like that they're changing things up quite a bit from the start. I mean, they don't want to copy themselves. And I am curious how everything's going to go down. And it's the same setup as last season. You know, it's 8 episodes and done. And then
it'll be 8.
Okay.
Other
characters.
Yeah, I forgot the first season was 8. That's good. That's good. You don't want to draw it out too much.
Exactly. Yeah, like they get the story done pretty quickly, so I'm very excited. And they also, the other thing about this season is they're changing up the directors. So Justin Lin, as you mentioned, he's doing these first two, but then they're changing up some other people. So it's kind of
it'll be interesting
to see how that goes down, because last season it was all the same writer and same director for every episode. So I don't know if they'll have a drastic effect on the quality of the episodes, but it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, maybe some of these episodes are going to focus on one character or two of the characters, you know, it'll be interesting. There's a lot. There's a lot of people in this one, and a lot of things already set up in just one episode. So there's a lot of ways this can now see how people interact next.
So before we go to the next segment, I want to ask you about the old Leonard Cohen doing the music for the opening bit. Like T-Bone Burnett, he kind of like does the music supervision for last season and this season. What did you think about this new?
When I heard it, I immediately was like, is that Leonard Cohen? Like,
I did too. I was like, isn't this something weird?
And then over the credits, I was also like, is that Nick Cave? And I was right on both accounts. What did I think of it? I didn't pay attention to what song it was, because I was thinking too much about, like, is this Leonard Cohen? I think it's Leonard Cohen. And I was just thinking about that too much. I mean, I enjoyed it because I like Leonard Cohen a lot, but I don't know.
I didn't like it as much as the first season's one, but it fixed it. Just like with Nick Cave and with Leonard Cohen, it fits with the whole dark aesthetic that they're going with.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So,
and I still like all those. The visuals are pretty cool, too. It's just like that weird...
I'll have to watch
weird
it
iconography
closely.
That splashes by.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention enough because I was just thinking of the Leonard Cohen song. The song is Nevermind by him, apparently, which is from his 2014 album, Popular Problems. So
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there's another episode like... Remember the one take shot where it went through with all the... I wonder if there'll be another...
Yeah, no, it will be.
Like
yeah, I'm excited to see what other camera trickery they can pull off in this. Because, yeah, first season had a lot of really iconic shots and sequences, and it'll be interesting to see if they can match it again. Because it's the bar is set. You did it, Nick. Come on, let's see what you got. So,
yeah.
Anyway. All right, so that is all for True Detective Season 2 on HBO. Airs every Sunday night, and we both recommend you watch it. Next up, we're going to be discussing a new television series on Comedy Central, the new comedy series, Another Period.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful. Hate me because I'm an awful bitch. I said I wanted scrambled eggs. I'm Lillian. Good things come in small packages. And by things, I mean penises. And by packages, I mean me.
I'm Beatrice. My name rhymes with sailboat.
Comedy Central has another new show coming out. Or it's already out. Of course. That's why we're talking about it. So anyway, another period. It's a weird mixture. Basically, the quick elevator pitch is mixing reality shows like Keeping Up with the Kardashians with something like Downton Abbey or, you know, other kind of period dramas. And a lot of heavy satire, highbrow, lowbrow kind of humor. And it kind of falls in love with, like, just kind of making fun of both of those from both angles. And then it's basically created and starred by Natasha Leggero, who's I've seen her before. She's very funny. And then Ricky Lindholm, who is part of the
Garfunkel and Oates.
Yes, Garfunkel and Oates. She's the taller one. so it's like at the turn of the 20th century. It follows the Bellecourts, which is the first family of Newport, Rhode Island. And a lot of it's dealing with, like, themes of class and, like, you know, kind of making fun of that type of society. And sometimes it'll be, like, jokes that are very specific to that period. And other times it's very, like, modern humor that works. It works on both sides, I think. And there's a real strong cast from this first episode that we saw. Like, Michael Ian Black is there as a butler named Mr. Peepers. There's Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, who shows up as one of the maids that has a history with one of the Bellecourts.
Oh.
Yes, yes. And then Jason Ritter is there. And I think they're going to have a lot of Comedy Central shows. They'll have some guests coming down.
Yeah. You basically described the concept. It is Keeping Up the Kardashians. Like, it's filmed like a reality TV series where you have people talking to the camera, but it's taking place in, you know, the early 20th century. So it's like not there's no way they're talking to cameras, but it's filmed like it. And the effect works well. I think it's an interesting idea to put it in that time period because we're so used to the mockumentary things like, you know, with Parks and Rec and Office and whatnot. So I like that.
Sure, sure.
And I think this is like the first big thing that Natasha Leggero is being a main person on, because she's one of the co-creators with Ricky Lindholm from Garfunkel and Oates, and she's been in a lot of different things, and she's been like a main cast on a few things, but this I think is her first big starring role, and her and Ricky Lindholm do a good job as like the two very aristocratic females, like the sisters on the show, like being like very Kardashian, like just, you know, spoiled and thinking that they deserve everything. And they have
they're always debating against each other or hating people that come and visit or hating on the people that wait on them. Just very like petty things.
Yeah. And they're surrounded by a lot of, you know, real heavy hitters from the comedy scene, people from like a lot of people from the state in Rio 911, like a lot of, you know, that cast members. And I love all those people. So it's great that they're here again. And I enjoyed this. I thought it was a novel concept to do. And there's a lot of jokes that really hit here that are funny. Like, I like the one sequence when I forget which characters it was exactly, but it's the man and the woman. They're both like of the richer people, and they're in the bedroom and they're talking about how they're going to make love to each other. And then standing behind both of them are like their rows of servants. Like, he has a bunch of guys and she has a bunch of lady servants. And then when they're about to like
slowly
start, they get undressed and like their servants come and start undressing them very slowly. And I like those stabs at the time period, but also just making fun of those scenes too. So there's things like that.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of cool scenes like that, whether it's with male, female, or like even the main two leads, like Ligero's character, she's just kind of, you know, she's a spoiled brat, and so she'll like ring a bell every time she wants a bite of food,
right?
And then she eats a little bit, kind of chews it, really, and then spits it out like, I'm full.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of cool like sight gags, even for like some of the smaller characters. I like the scenes with the Mr. Peepers, kind of, it's very Downton Abbey where they're like down, like,
right
next,
right,
like in the, you know, downtown, they always had those scenes where they're kind of next to the kitchen area, like in that big table, and he's just like talking to the staff, like just treating them like dirt.
Yeah.
And then it comes to pass with like the, when they go up and, you know, help out, because,
right,
like for instance, like Christina Hendricks' character, like they decide like remembering what to call her is too difficult, so they just kind of rename her,
yeah,
chair.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, the show's got some really clever sight gags, and the writing is solid too. Yeah, you have I like how what's his name shows up, Thomas Lennon shows up as the Marquis, and he is very animated.
Yeah, there are a lot
stuff.
Of people where it's like, you look familiar.
Right.
Like, Thomas Lennon is a little more familiar, but there's a few others where it's just like, I know that guy. And then I had to, like, look him up and say, oh, yeah, he's been a ton of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of people that have been in everything. Basically the state. They've all been on the state. But, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, I mean, just lots of funny little sight gags. I think everyone holds their own here. You have, and it's got a good mix of all the different walks. Like, I think the Downton Abbey style of doing things is really funny. Like, seeing it from the service point of view, and Michael Ian Black's Peepers, Michael Ian Black has been really good in a lot of different shows, and he might be my favorite one here because he's got a lot of really good one-liners and a lot of jokes
he was
directed
fun.
At just being a slave, but the satire there is really good too. I think I like more of like the servant stuff than I did the maybe upper class stuff, but it all works together well.
Because the stuff with the up crust, like, it kind of devolved into like more gags or like cheap sex jokes, or like even the stuff with like basically Helen Keller comes to visit.
Yes,
and they're obviously going for like, we're gonna make fun of the fact that she's blind,
right,
and that kind of just went like not necessarily crass, but it was just at that point like I like more of the more clever jokes than just
there was
descending into just craziness.
Yeah, there was some funny bits with her. Like, I liked when Thomas Lennon came in and they were doing sign language with each other, and he was like holding her hand with Helen Keller. And then I think it was Natasha Leggero's character comes up and tries to like do sign language too, and he's like, "What are you doing? That's gibberish. That's nothing. Stop it!" Like, so I like those parts. Like I mean it's a lot of funny little gags. It's a 20-minute show. There's not much more to say about it. It's on Comedy Central, and it's funny. It's worth your time to watch. And there's not much more to dissect here. I would just say, you know,
it was very surprising.
Yeah,
like I liked all the, just like the interaction with all the characters. I think that's gonna help it overall. And it has a very pretty novel kind of. I mean, there's been movies obviously with Mel Brooks, and then we reviewed that IFC show, The Spoils of Babylon. Like, there's been plenty of like satirization of, you know, whether it's soaps or genres that are very highbrow or, you know, melodramatic.
Yeah,
you know, or Mel Brooks has done a bunch of stuff like that.
It's not easy.
I think this is cool. Like, it's been a little while.
Yeah, you make a good point, because Spoils of Babylon was really hit or miss. It was super high concept. That it didn't really work overall, but this one is
sometimes it helps to be more broad. Like, if you're if you're targeted at a very specific audience, then it can be kind of hard.
I think that you're absolutely right. They got a nice broad one here, and then it's also directed by Jeremy Connor, who is the co-creator and one of the writers for Drunk History. And this has a very, I mean, like, even though Drunk History does a lot of stuff in the past, like, that aesthetic applies here to it. I mean, even though it's a totally different show, like, I can kind of see it makes sense. So
because
there's a lot of gags with the period then too in that one.
Yeah, it like vacillates between like being some clever like historical jokes, but then jokes where people are just throwing up into a toilet bowl. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of that with another period.
Yeah.
Plus, I like the little play on words with the title there.
Oh, yes. It is good. So anyway, okay. Well, so I mean, I think that's about all to say. I'd say, you know, it's on Tuesday nights on Comedy Central, and it's very much worth your time. So check out Another Period. That's Kyle. I think you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise. Do you know how many episodes they have for this first season?
That's a good question.
I gotta plan out. I guess it's a summer. 10? Okay. Yeah. That's manageable.
10 episodes of 20 minutes apiece. Come on, Kyle. How hard will
that be? If I can watch The Strain for even more, I can watch this.
Is that back episodes. Yet? Or I don't think that's back yet.
It's coming.
It's coming.
July.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I'll give you the updates.
Thank goodness. I'm glad we're not reviewing.
Because I know you're waiting.
Please don't put it on the schedule.
Yes.
All right.
That's what we'll end the show with.
The Strain recap, just series. Yeah. All right. So that is Another Period on Comedy Central. Lastly, we're going to be discussing the second album from Kacey Musgraves with her new album, Pageant Material. Ain't gotta be alone to feel lonely. I'm gonna turn off my phone, start catching up with the old. Me personally knows that I bring up Kacey Musgraves on probably a pretty fairly regular basis. She's a country artist from good old, well, she's where's she like from? I don't think she's from Nashville, Tennessee. She's from damn it, this is not good. She's from Alba, Texas originally, but
Texas, there we go. That makes sense. She's got some references to Texas.
That's what I was thinking, because there's some songs in this album where she's talking about like where she's from, and she's not from Nashville. I knew that. So So Kacey Musgraves, country artist from Alba, Texas originally, but now through Nashville. She released in 2013 Same Trailer, Different Park, her debut album, and widely critically acclaimed. I believe it won a couple Grammys. Yeah, yeah. I am deeply in love with that album. I absolutely adore
really
it.
Solid.
It's a very solid album. And for me, I'm not like a huge, we've talked about country before, and country is one of those genres that there's certainly like, it's harder to, I guess, really get into. I mean, there's a lot of people who do sample it just fine, but if you're not a normal listener to it, or a regular listener, I should say, then, and I'm not a regular listener to country, but Kacey Musgraves had her hooks in me from the start.
Yeah, it's a genre that can be, it's easy to fall into the gut reaction where it's like, it sounds all the same.
Exactly.
Because it can be very
simple. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, so can hip hop too. So I mean, you know, it certainly falls prey. A lot of genres are that way. But you're absolutely right. That is a criticism. But if you listen to a lot of, you know, really good country, they can break out of those stereotypes or those cliches, if you will. So Kacey Musgraves, I immediately fell in love with her first album, and I really liked her. I thought she was a really strong artist, great voice, great style. I thought her songs had a really nice message to them as well. So just like very different.
Yeah, very charming overall.
Very, very, very charming, very clever songwriting and play on words. She writes a large majority of her songs, or at least co-writes them. So I was very, very excited for her second album, Pageant Material. Seemed like it was the right title to do, because she certainly embraces the country stereotypes to a degree, but like in song title and in subject matter at times, but she does put her own twist on things. And this album has come out, and I got really excited for this album because a couple of the tracks leaked before it came out, like the single Biscuits came out, and I thought that was a really nice little romper. And then there was this one song that isn't on the album, but it was like it was called The Trailer Song, and that I think it was just released as like a single through iTunes.
And
I like that one too. So I was excited, and then listening to the album, I've listened to this album a couple times, and I'm definitely having a harder time getting into this one. As much as maybe it'll get better in time, it's a little bit of a slower, it's slower not just in a burn, but a slower album overall. And I felt like most of the time, a lot of these songs kind of fall into a very, there'll be a charmer or two, but nothing really that ever hit quite the highs of Same Trailer, Different Park. But there's a lot more slower jams on this that kind of almost have a beach feel to them, like a beach country. And I wasn't a big fan of those. Most noticeably, there's this one track on here, Late to the Party, that that one kind of like, it doesn't grate on me. Like, her voice is really smooth, but it doesn't. I just felt like it was such a kind of a lazy song.
Yeah, I do like that one. I think.
Oh, okay.
But I see what you're going here with, though, because I really like High Time. Like I like those first few tracks, but they are like very quick hit, like get on the radio kind of songs, because they're not like super catchy necessarily. Dime Store Cowgirl is more catchy, and then Biscuits Course is the more catchiest of the bunch. But yeah, they're very quick hit, casual kind of experiences. And it makes sense that she said that she's going to veer more for the third album. She's going to do like a surf rock pop kind of thing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the bad thing about this. Like, it's not a bad album. I think it's overall it's a little more what's the word, consistent than the last album.
Yeah, I can see that.
Just because she's got all of her writing people together. She's got like her band together. It's a little more cohesive. But I do agree that the highs on the first one are a lot higher. But I still like that country Paulson kind of, like, there's a lot of strings on this that are really cool. Like, reminds me of those classic, like, Patsy Cline kind of songs, or Dolly Parton. And I like the moment at the very end, like the hidden track with Willie Nelson.
Yeah, I know,
tipped her hat to a lot of those songs.
And she puts it on as a hidden track at the end. I was kind of impressed.
It's been a while since
that.
I've heard a hidden track.
Well, and especially one that's like a country icon like Willie Nelson. So that's an interesting song to put
on. Such a short song, too. So it's good you don't like wait for 5 minutes. Or
no, you don't have to skip ahead on your CD player. No, I agree. I mean, like, this is not a bad album by any means, so I don't want to put that out there. It's just...
Yeah, I was really down on it the first time I listened.
I think me too. I gave it a listen, and I was just kind of like, okay, well, you know, but repeat listens, I've definitely gotten into it a little bit more, but... And I agree with your note that this feels much more like a complete album, whereas her first album was a lot more of a collection of songs, and they all had their own unique style to them. This one feels
sorry,
cohesive.
I haven't listened to the same trailer, different park, recently, but it is true that, like, she had a lot of really strong songs at the beginning with, like, Merry Go Round and, of course, like, Blowing Smoke and Fall Your Arrow, I guess, is towards the end. And it's hard to remember that interspersed between those really big singles, like, she did have a lot of, like, kind of sleeper storytelling kind of songs, kind of like the Getting Late to the Party song, where it doesn't really necessarily like grab you by the shirt collar and makes you want to, like, you know, kind of dance like Biscuits. But I think it shows her knack, or the rest of her songwriting team's knack, for just telling a story in the classic country style, which...
Yeah,
I think the most thing is, like, this is not very nostalgic kind of release.
Yeah,
it's not like a big, like, downer of a sophomore effort. But
yeah, like this
it doesn't
feels...
push her forward in a big way either.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't feel like this is a statement record by any means, but it certainly feels like she is trying to say something with it. Because there's a lot of reference to where she's from and what's been going on.
Yeah,
like, this town is
family.
All about, you know, I had to get out of my small town to get to where I am now. And she's got some really clever wordplay. Again, like, her writing is still very, very solid. I love some of the play on words she does in different songs. And she embraces the country aesthetic really, really well. And like you said, the strings on this are good. It's got some really great banjo picking on here. It's a pretty album to listen to. So I don't want to dog on it. I think that, you know, this album is certainly worth your time. But it's just, I don't know, it didn't grab me like the first one did, and it's a slower album, and some of the songs on here I just quite, like, I don't know, like Die Fun later
like,
on.
I was like, I kind of skipped past this one. That was one where it got a little too cute with its wordplay. Like, she's known for that kind of cute way of turning a phrase, and even turning phrases that are well old hats, like, you can't take the country, you know, you can take me out of the country, but I can't take the country at me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like that. She sold that, but then Die Fun, where she tries to spin it even more, it just fell flat.
Right.
But yeah. Or even like Good Old Boys Club, like that one felt like she was trying to capture that kind of statement song that she had on a lot of the tracks on the first album, but it doesn't necessarily go anywhere.
No.
I agree. I think Pattern Material works a little better, where she's like just kind of listing off like the reasons why she's not pageant material, and,
right?
You know,
I agree. Like, she's very self-deprecating. She's done it on other songs too, and I like that here too. She's talking about how she's I don't see how I can fix it in a swimsuit on a stage. I ain't exactly Miss Congenial. Sometimes I talk before I think. I try to fake it, but I can't. I'd rather lose for what I am than win for what I ain't. Like, it's that's a nice songwriting, and overall song is really good too.
It's really refreshing for this genre, because this genre is all about like tradition, and it's very fun to have those lyrics coming from a song that's very traditional in the way it's constructed.
Right.
It's kind of like flipping the script on what
you expect. Yeah, and she does that a lot. And I think, and this album is pretty, like, it's a very, the album sounds as a whole like an album, but it's pretty inconsistent with the quality. Like, it really goes up and down. Like, I think one of the later songs on here, Fine, I think that's a really nice slow burn of an ender. It seems so just kind of lulling you to sleep and being very, I don't know, like just a nice letdown after everything. And I don't mean letdown in a bad way. It just kind of, you know, it puts you to sleep. And that's kind of what the song's about, too. So I think she can do slow songs really well. She can do this stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
I did enjoy it. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it some more, because I Kacey Musgraves is my girl. And like you said, it starts off really, really strong. Like those first two songs, High Time and Dime Store Cowgirl, but even then, like I like those right away, but I certainly was like, okay, well, it's not exactly as good as first album.
I think the downfall overall is that she needed to push a little further from that first album. I think this one's a little too close to the last one, because they even have songs like, you know, Follow Your Arrow was a huge, huge song for her for the first record. And then Cup of Tea kind of goes over a lot of the same stuff, kind of like pro-divorce, pro-promiscuity, but also, like, you know, do whatever you want, like, just as long as you, like, it doesn't necessarily say Follow Your Arrow, but, like,
yourself. Yeah, and so does Biscuits, too. Biscuits basically is Follow Your Arrow again.
Yeah, the music sounds very similar there.
And it also is saying the same message, just, you know, hey, do your own thing, and you're going to have a good time. That's the message of the song. And, you know, I certainly, she's finding a really good way of saying the same thing in a different way. That's music in general, but I agree, she's definitely covering a lot of the same material, and even when she knocks it out of the park with both, you know, Biscuits and Cup of Tea. Well, like, I don't remember Cup of Tea that strongly, but she can, like, you know, I agree. I think she is, you know, it'd be good to see her push further. Maybe the surf thing will do really well. I don't know. I'm definitely going to keep listening. So
I think she's definitely using her venue, her celebrity and the success of the first album to, you know, continue having songs that are kind of pushing the boundaries. Like, even the, I saw, like, she had a release party where it was basically a drag show, and she brought a bunch of trans people on stage.
Oh, nice.
Just things that are just, like, very, very different from what you'd expect from Nashville.
Yeah, I like that as well. And she did that, obviously, she put her flag in the ground very early with Follow Your Arrow being one of her early singles and being a statement song like that, especially in the realm of country music, where that's still, you know, kind of sacrilegious territory to some degree, even though a lot of country music is really, you know, lessened on that. And
yeah, it's funny how people get mad about something like High Time, where, you know, it has, you know, reference pro pot innuendo all over that stuff, let the grass just grow, but then it's fine when guys sing about beers
exactly.
And
yeah, really
shooting things up and
heavy
doses of just being jerks towards women.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Willie Nelson's been singing about weed for decades, so come on.
Yeah, that's
made
true.
A career out of her, crying out loud. So
that's why she's buddies on track 14.
That's why they're hanging out, getting high with Willie. So I mean, overall, I'd say, you know, this is a good album. I would say, you know, if you're gonna give Kacey Musgraves a try, give her first album is amazing. I love it. You should. I would easily say that album, but this is still not a bad entry point either.
I just
think it's not as well representative of the highs that she's capable of. But this is still very good. I'm looking forward to what she does next. I'm glad she's still putting things out there and pushing things forward a little bit. I hope next time she can, you know, come on, Kacey. I'm rooting for you. That's all.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting because she's still like keep with that writing team that's worked well.
Right.
She still has like really cool lines, like family, I really like that song. Mm. And it has a really cool line that I wrote down, like, they own too much wicker. Just talking about, like, you know, they're going to have a bunch of wicker chairs on their porch.
Right.
So there's still those small moments where you're like, ah, this, she's still got it. But it's it's a little more subtle of a release. Some slower songs, some songs that kind of drift in now because they're so short. Don't have a lot of room to breathe.
Right. So, yeah. And I like that she has a full band now that seems to be her regular band.
Yeah, I wanted to see her live.
I've seen her live with that band. And so I'm pretty sure it's the same, because it's the same. I saw them on the Tonight Show and it was the same exact band as before. So I'm pretty sure that's her like studio band now too. And she when I saw her last year, she was really great. And it'd be exciting to see her again. And
I was tempted to go see her, but she was playing at like one of those huge venues with Lady Antebellum. I was like, I'd rather just go see her.
No, you don't want to do herself. That. No. Wait, she'll come around.
I'd be jumping in the deep end. And
that's only for
a small set.
Yeah, and everyone's there. Everyone's for Lady Antebellum just knows one song. So So that is Kacey Musgraves or their latest album, Pageant Material, and that is all for episode number 157 of Test Patterns.
Yep,
Kyle. Yep. Thank you, as always, for your hard work and talking about stuff. Oh, of course. And thank you, me, for doing all my hard work, too. And thank you, microphones, for recording our voices. Thank you for computers.
Mr. Samson.
I don't know what mine is. I use a different microphone now because my Samson broke a long time ago.
Mr. Shirt. The industry standard.
Yeah. What was that?
Isn't it Shure? The microphone that's like the industry standard for podcasting? I don't know. All I know is I don't use it, but I'm fine.
Sure, I think is a nice brand, but I don't know what the industry standard for podcasting is. There's so many microphones. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Thank you, cable, for connecting to the computer. Thank you, computer, for converting our audio into ones and zeros so we can edit it. And last but not least, thank you, dear listener, for listening all the way to the very end of this very long thank you list. I'm like Jimmy Fallon, my thank you notes.
We
do appreciate you listening as always, and we do appreciate you supporting the show. And as I said at the beginning, it's very somber, but as we bring things to a close, please write in. Tell me or Kyle personally like something you liked from the show, something you enjoyed that we talked about. Maybe you learned from listening to the show. I hope you didn't watch the show. Look at a wall and watch us. Something maybe you got just exposed to, some banter we had. I don't know. There's something memorable. It'd be tell Kyle or tell me personally.
You have a limited amount of time before we take this puppy out to pasture.
Exactly. Kyle and I will not be talking when this is done. And you can either tell us personally if you know us, or you can write on our Facebook page, which is Test Patterns on Facebook.com/Test Patterns. And you can also give us an email, testpatternspodcast@gmail.com. I did look at it recently, and I don't think there was a ton of spam in there, but I don't remember seeing any messages. So I don't think anybody really emails us. I gave up on that a long time ago. But thank you for listening, people. We will be back next week, so we'll see you then.
Will.
Same time, same place, same internet. Kyle.
Question mark, exclamation mark, circle, period, square, rectangle. Bye.
Dear brother, I'm sending your and your nephews to 3RSRT. Listen, you sketch to your mother. Do it. Ha! Now, I'm the
Bye.